Well, welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you on the dawn of this Shabbat. We're only now a couple of weeks, maybe closer to three, to celebrating Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkurim. JB, it's good to have you a part of the program.
Good to be back.
Yeah, thank you so very much for your contribution to Shattering Myths, your circumcision program. We're all up to snuff on what and when to cut. And you did the Pesach and Matzah for us, so we're good to go there. I can now talk just on Bukkurim as we approach those days.
Yeah, I was hoping to do a whole day on each chapter, but that didn't work out.
No.
There's a lot more material there than we could cover.
Oh, goodness. And if you really cover all of the references to it, whether it's the historical reference in the Exodus, the presentation that Yahweh has and Kara, and then if you invitations, and if you look then at the recap of them in Devarim, and then the way that they weave themselves through the prophets, through their fulfillment, and particularly Pesach and Matzah as they has a dress rehearsal for Pesach back there with Abraham on Mount Moriah, and then with Pesach and Matzah and Bukkurim with Yosha's fulfillment of them in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. Oh, goodness. It's just so much material.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a regular feast of information, if you will. If you know you want to keep it in festival feast mode. There is just so much to learn, so much to explore, so much to understand,
and not a single bit of it you want to gloss over.
No, and particularly as it relates to matzah, and there's so much of matzah and even Passover that is made available for us as an eyewitness account that can be found in Psalm 22:88 and Yeshayah 53. It's just absolutely amazing how we were given that eyewitness testimony 700 to 1,000 years before it actually transpired.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the best descriptions of it aren't in the Greek text at all.
I agree. It's it's one of those things that stumped me initially when I would have those who still had a bit of an affinity, and there's a lot of people that have come to know Yahweh that still have an affinity for the Greek texts, and it was one of those things that was the constant argument. Well, if you didn't have what they would call the Gospels, we'll call the eyewitness accounts or the hearsay accounts, a combination of the two, how would you know?
I just call it the Greek text.
Yeah, how would you know that these things had happened? And I really wasn't in a great position to answer them because you need two things. One is you need to appreciate the prophecies. And they're not hard to find because, for example, on Psalm 22, Yahusha quoted it on the upright pole. So he said, so all you need is to say, okay, did he just make this up or is he citing something? And so you can find that. But reading through it, unless you really understand what these mikre represent, what these invitations are all about, and how God went about enabling the promises associated with them, then it's difficult, even when you're given the eyewitness accounts, to know what's going on. And then you've got to have one other thing going for you, and I think that is that you have to stop looking at prophecy as God predicting the future through individuals. If you begin to look at prophecy as future history, where Yahweh has actually witnessed these events in our future and has reported what he has seen in our past, so that prophecy becomes eyewitness testimony in advance of the events occurring, that perspective changes your whole understanding of what you're reading, and therefore, you don't need to have a Greek text eyewitness account because you've got an eyewitness account of the central participant.
Yeah. Well, and to me, that argument just always, it never held water because, really, I don't need evidence that Yah fulfilled that. He told me he would. He has a 100% track record. I don't need an eyewitness account telling me he did it. It's nice, and it adds a lot of perspective, but I don't need that.
Yeah, well, I do not need it relative to the promises of the covenant, and the promises of the covenant are enabled through the first four Mikrae. And I would agree with you in that regard. I do think knowing how and when and where he fulfilled those promises is certainly enlightening. It certainly helps our understanding. So I would just change that perspective. Yes, I agree with you. God's track record is 100%. We don't need him to prove to us that he has done what he has promised to do. But yet being able to read an eyewitness account of what he has done for us in this regard and how his sacrifice enables the benefits of the covenant, it's still pretty interesting. I mean, it's not just interesting. It helps us understand this whole process that he's laid out. It really reinforces the path that he has provided to him. So when we read, "Walk to me and become perfect," you understand what that means if you've correlated the eyewitness accounts with the promises.
Exactly.
You know, speaking of reporting back.
Hello, Larry.
Hey, you know, over there in Revelation, he talks about he calls this era the people legislate or Laodicea.
Yeah.
You know, and I was reading today as part of a plan to reduce U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, the White House is looking to control cow flatulence through legislation and regulation. Yeah, no, really. I mean, that's the insanity. It's no wonder he called us the. They call this era the people legislate. It's simply retarded. I remember.
Yeah, that reminds me of a story I read where one state.
Tornadoes out of business when Clinton was in power, too. Yeah. I mean, simply insane. You know, I mean, he's reporting in so many ways that we don't even realize. Laodicea.
You
know?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember reading a story from back in, I believe it was the 1930s, where a state tried to legislate that pi be 3.2. Yeah, it's a mathematical constant, but we're going to change it by legislation. Or, yeah, we changed by legislation that pizza is now a vegetable. We
sure.
Declared such.
Why don't we claim that Muslims invented algebra? You know, why not?
Sure.
Why don't we call that Arabic numbers?
I think I've heard that
another
yes before somewhere. But I'm not sure.
Oh, goodness. Yes, today I read an article that the climatologists associated with the UN are so whacked out on the current alarmist report on global warming that the chief scientist associated with the mission, he resigned. He just said, basically,
no
you're
boss.
Nuts. And, you know, and what the article does, in the article that covers it, what it doesn't say is that they're really in a quandary trying to explain global cooling. Because in the last 15 years, that's what we've experienced, is global cooling.
It's bizarre. It's just
so
bizarre.
It is so bizarre. And the ice pack this past year was 60% beyond anything that we had seen in 100 years. And they had predicted that the Arctic would be ice-free, that we'd actually have a northern passage north of Canada, and that this year it would be ice-free is what they had predicted. The ice pack
just didn't work out.
Well, went 60% further south than any time in recorded history.
I don't know if the Earth is cooling or warming,
but we know it's man-made.
Oh, goodness. You know, Lake Superior, for the first time in decades, froze solid. I mean, it's only twice in the recorded history of man on this particular continent that we've known that's happened. It's
frozen
solid.
You got
solid.
Ducks literally starving to death because they can't get to the fish because of the ice. I mean, there's
right.
No kidding.
They don't think the ice is going to break up on Lake Superior until August.
And global warming continues.
Oh, my. Yeah, we're going to freeze to death.
Warming or cooling, but they're 100% certain it's man-made.
You know, and what's amazing, too, is if you look at the history of global warming and global cooling, because they're on 700-year cycles, warming cycle and then a cooling cycle.
Is that what they are, 700 years? That would make sense.
Yeah, it's on average 700 years. Sometimes it's 600 years, sometimes it's 800 years, but its average is 700 years is the cycle. And that cycle we can now trace back through tree ring growth and through ocean sediment back about 50,000 years. So we've got a pretty good scientific amount of data on it, and we can, in terms of the times of recorded history, we can take it all the way back prior to the rise of the Greeks. And what we have found is that during periods of warming, that man was healthier, more vibrant, the planet produced more food, people lived longer, societies progressed, and that during the cooling periods is when you had all sorts of anarchy, you had starvation, you had the onset of much more disease, and so...
You grew less food.
You grew less food, and people were more cranky, and so we're much better off during periods of warming than we are of cooling.
Can you imagine spending, you know, $60 trillion or some ridiculous, whatever figure, to change the temperature of the Earth by 1 degree?
Well,
I
let
mean,
me tell you something. If we were to, if we were to invest the gross domestic product of all 200 nations on Earth and take 100% of it and devote 100% of it to reducing the Earth's temperature, we could not reduce it by 1 degree.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that.
No, we can't change it one bit.
Oh, we can't.
There's this thing out there called the sun, you know. And
you know, and my solution right at the moment is that we can resolve the period of global cooling and get a nice rotisserie effect. Probably save a lot of energy, too, because it'd be light 24 hours a day if we'd send all of our nukes into Jupiter and turn it into a mini star.
Another sun?
Yeah, another sun. I think it's a perfect plan.
It's just, I don't know, man. Yah saw all this, and he's pretty clear. The people legislate. Now, they legislate to no end. He didn't mention, you know, to... for no good reason and stupidly, but they legislate, and that's what we're seeing. I think it was 40,000 new laws went into existence in January. Can you imagine that? I'm probably breaking the law right now.
I'm sure we are. let's turn to it.
We'll talk about Islam, and then that'll be you know, hate speech.
Of course. Well, most everything we say is hate speech because we don't go along with political correctness, nor with the propaganda that's being spewed out by this country, which I want to tell you must be the most hypocritical, ignorant place on Earth. If there's a place more hypocritical and more ignorant in terms of its yabbering, I don't know what is, but the, you know, that China episode here recently where the technology company was banned from doing any business in America because the Chinese might use it potentially to spy on America, when America at that very moment had broken into their surveys, was stealing their corporate secrets, which they had spent $4 billion becoming the most technologically advanced company in the world in that area. And we went into their servers, stole their information, and then put phone taps on all of their executives. At the same time, we're saying, you know, we have to bar them because the Chinese might use them to spy on us. You know, at that point, you know, even the Chinese said, you're a bunch of pompous hypocrites.
Well, you know, I mean, we're not making friends anywhere. I'm sure of that. I mean,
can you imagine today, Putin called Obama today over the Ukraine. Can you imagine him starting off? He says, you are an amazing jerk. I have no respect for you whatsoever. And I assuming that you're doing all this to grandstand. But since I'm not interested in starting World War III, although you may be, let's talk this through. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do, and I'm going to really give you some advice. Why don't you just shut up? Can you imagine that conversation that Putin would have had with Obama?
Well, I think he would have probably treated him like a little first grader, like he is. I mean, I believe he probably would have. And, you know, when you talk about hypocritical, I mean, you're talking about a country that runs into other countries and kills millions of people all in the name of democracy. You know, we're going to free the hell out of you. I mean,
right.
It's insanity.
Yeah, we're going to impose a broken political system that's mob rule that has bankrupt our country. And by the way, we're not going to even give it to you the way we do it. We're going to give it to you the way that the UK does it, because they're much better colonialists than we are. They're much better imperialists. So we're going to give you their system, the parliamentary system of mob rule. It'll ought to work great for you. Look what it's done to us.
Amazing.
Yes, indeed. Well, Dode had a different approach. He said, I will observe your Torah continuously, consistently, always and forever, as an eternal witness. And if you were to summarize everything that Dode had to say, this, the 44th statement from the 119th Psalm, pretty much covers it. I will observe your Torah continually and consistently as an eternal witness. And we haven't done this in a while, so it's probably worth doing. It's since the religious want Torah to be law, and even people who have a clue still refer to the Torah as law. And they
constantly.
They almost do so, because if you don't, then you have to throw Paul out. I mean, if you don't think that the Torah is comprised of laws, then you have to discard Paul. And even people who have written books on the Torah are unwilling to discard Paul, so they still refer to Torah as law, even though there is absolutely nothing even remotely related to law in its etymology. And in addition to that, there isn't a Hebrew word for obey. So here we go, Torah. Your Torah instruction and teaching, your source of guidance and direction. It is derived from ko, which means signed, written, and enduring. Torah, way of treating people. Tor, giving us the means to explore, to seek, to find, and to choose. It's based on the verb yara. According to Yahweh, when he introduces the term, he tells us that it's based on the verb yara. Yara means it's a source of instruction, teaching, guiding, and direction that flows, and this was written in the second person, he's speaking of Yahweh, that flows from you. Which tube provides answers to facilitate my restoration and return, and my response and reply to that which is tobe. Now, tobe and tube are the only two words that include a letter that isn't in Torah, and they were included in my review because God twice equates Torah to tobe, T-W-B. And since he says tobe equivalent Torah, I figure that's good enough for me, so I'm going to include tobe, which is good, pleasing, beneficial, favorable, healing, and right, that which causes us to be loved, to become acceptable, and to endure.
I don't know how Yah's word could not be tobe.
Yeah. And then it says that if you look at, well, yes, it's in case we were wondering, he calls it tobe. Of course, Paul said it was the opposite. He called it pornography. And it makes us become acceptable so that we can endure. Taror, which means to purify and cleanse us, thereby tor, providing us the opportunity to change our attitude, our thinking, and our direction. Now, I don't get where there's any reference to a legal system in that word.
I don't either.
No.
But, you know, when everything that you see and hear in today's world is predicated on legal systems, it's hard for people to break out of that train of thought.
Correct.
I mean, I've watched a number of shows, I'm sure many of us have, with the, you know, where they have stalkers that go after people, and then a woman goes out or some guy goes out, whoever, and they make a they finally got a law passed, and they dedicated their life, and they show them standing there proudly. You know, and what they did may have been a decent thing. But, you know, when you dedicate your life to nonsense like passing laws, in the end, you're just dead, you know.
Correct.
And
if you devote your life to obeying laws, then you've never lived.
That's a fact, too, you know.
Yeah.
So, and you've got people, by the way, I just want to throw in here. There's a number of people that don't even, you know, they don't agree with Paul. They expose Paul as a liar. They call him a liar, and they call him what he is. And they still call the Torah law. And
yeah.
It's because they can't break out
yeah.
and understand that this, you know, Yah doesn't expect much of us. He wants us to understand his plan. It's all in the Torah.
You know, father equals guidance. Father equals instruction. Father equals teaching. Father never equals law. And so this misrepresenting the Torah as law is a big deal.
It is
because
a big
lords
deal.
Lay down the law. Fathers provide
right.
guidance. It is the antithesis of one another. And so it's not a small issue. And
it's
for
a
those
huge
that would
issue.
Say, yeah, for those that would say, well, Shamar should be translated keep, not observe. And then I would say, okay, if that's the case, then why don't you show me where there is any implication in keep other than to keep focused on, keep your eyes open, implication of with keep as in the sense of obey in the word's use in history. And they've got no answer for that. You know, Shamar, this was Shamar Torah. Shamar Torah. Shamar means to closely examine and carefully consider. It means to focus on something, to prioritize it, to use your eyes to consider what it has to say.
Can I give you an example? Can I give you an example?
Mm-hmm.
I got this off from you on Shattering Myths. We were talking about Abraham.
Right.
This is, you know, how am I going to know that this is really going to happen, you know? And he said, let's sit down and eat. And he said, there it is. You know, I probably blew by that 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And then, of course, yeah, that's the Chag. You know, there's the Moed Mikra right there.
Right, right there.
But I blew right by it. Something as mundane as let's sit down and eat.
Right.
Right.
And then all you need to do is say, all right, where else does God encourage us to sit down and have a feast with him? Because this wasn't just eating. I mean, there's quite the menu here.
Yeah, right.
Where else does God talk about this? Where else does God say, let's get together and share a meal? Oh, let's see. There's Passover. There's matzah. There's Bikurim. There's Shavuah. There's Teruah. I think I'm finding a pattern here. You know, it's...
Yes,
almost everything God says makes sense
overlook.
On every level.
It's pretty easy to overlook, trust me. But then it's right there in your face, and I thought, why did I blow by that? And, you know, there's probably people in the chat room thinking the same thing. Why?
Yeah.
You know, or maybe I'm the only guy that blew by
that. No, I'm sure. I did most until this last time through. We did have a question that was raised in the chat room that says, how do we know that the Psalms, which were authored by Dodd,
mm-hmm.
are inspired? So I'm going to throw out some ideas, and you guys can add to them or reject them.
Well, he talked about the crucifixion.
Okay, well, okay. So there's the first. He provided an eyewitness account of a form of physical death and exactly how it would work 1,000 years before that form of death was invented and suggested that it would be the sacrificial lamb of Yahweh that would endure that form of death. Okay, that's going to qualify up there in the... Oh, that's a pretty good prophecy. Prophecy is a form of proving something to be true. All right, so Dodd wrote all of these wonderful psalms. If they weren't inspired, if they weren't precisely accurate, do you think Yahweh would have called Dodd righteous?
No.
No. Okay. When Yosha is quoting, and he quotes from the Psalms, by quoting from the Psalms, do you think he's adding some legitimacy to the fact that...
I would say so,
yeah. I would say so.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when Yosha is asked to define the Word of God, and he defines it as Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, you think that might give us some...
That lends credibility to the Mizmors there.
Okay, so the first thing you've got is drop-dead stunning prophecy, prophecy that would have been impossible for an ordinary man to know when you're saying that God himself is going to endure a form of torture that wouldn't be invented for 1,000 years, and you get every aspect of it right medically, even beyond what would be known medically for another 2,500 years.
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, it talks
so,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's a pretty good one. And then Yosha reaffirming that the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms of Scripture, Yahweh going out of his way to say this guy who didn't live the most perfect life, but wrote the most powerful songs in terms of how we can come to enhance our relationship with Yahweh. And he calls this dude righteous. That's a pretty good indication. But how about this one? What he has to say is wholly consistent with what we've come to know about Yahweh. And everything he says is consistent with what Yahweh has to say. We don't find anything in his testimony that is out there on a limb, the least bit inconsistent with what God has to say.
Yep, that stands too. Sure.
How would you like, Larry, to be given the task and say, okay, Larry, you're a pretty articulate guy. What I want you to do is there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. Each one of those letters conveys a thought. I want you, in alphabetical order, to write a song that explains how to best understand, to know and understand my Torah so that you can get the maximum benefit from it. And I want you to do it with 8 verses to each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, with each of those stanzas communicating the basis of those letters. How are you going to do, Lair?
I'm not going to do as well as Dode did. But
yeah,
that's going to be pretty rough. Yeah, and of course, that's interesting
that,
too, because that represents eternity.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
You know, it takes me my best days with all cylinders operating to even understand what he conveyed. Much, you know, the difference between somebody giving you the formula and all you have to do is understand what they've said, and being able to present, you know, the formula from scratch, those are really different things.
Yeah, it's like me driving, you know, a car down the street as opposed to putting it together. I agree.
Yeah.
Really.
Exactly. It's the difference between reading a book and writing a book.
Yeah, huge difference.
Yeah, and also, since Dode claims to have... been inspired, if he made a single mistake, rather than being righteous, God would call him dead.
He would condemn him, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you got to be really careful when you move into this this difference between you and I can read Yahweh's testimony and do our best to understand what he said, and we can make a mistake, and there's no penalty.
Yeah, we can't write it, though, and not claim we write it.
Right, but if we were to move the next step and say, God gave me this insight, God gave me this prediction that isn't written anyplace else, and we have one nuance of it wrong, like his name, like the timing, like its integration into the whole of the Torah. If we err in the smallest way on that, what's our fate?
Death.
Worse than death.
Yeah, you know, and we see it all the time. I mean, I see it all the time in these spiritual people. Mm-hmm. I mean, somehow their energies have beings of energy running around, but they're trapped in a human body. And it's just a weird, they all have secret meetings. And,
oh, yeah.
And God showed them this and that, and it's always in opposition.
I'm always careful to say I'm not only a flawed implement, but all I'm trying to share is what God told us in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so is it possible that I have misinterpreted something that he said? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But none of this is a personal revelation. It's strictly, this is what can be gleaned from his testimony. Now, in this particular case, is Dode saying, I wrote the Torah, I'm expanding the Torah, I'm adding to the Torah, and
no.
You all should read my addition to the Torah.
No. He's not pulling a Paul on us here.
No, what he's saying is here, I will observe your Torah. I will observe your Torah continuously and consistently, always
and
forever, as an eternal witness.
Yeah, and you know, that's really what Yah was asking us to do. I mean,
right.
To pass on is to get his plan and pass that plan on and walk on that plan. And
now, let me lay something on you here, Larry. If I write a book or a chapter or a volume on what the Torah says, or on somebody's, like Dode's, analysis of the Torah, is it inspired?
No. It is in the sense of the word. As long as you're sharing Yahweh's words, it's inspired.
Yeah, that's right. So if, for example, there's four chapters devoted to the Torah. One of the chapters is just citations from the Torah. If I'm quoting from the Torah and I'm saying, this is what these words mean, and this is how God has used these words in other places, and this is the implications of these words, isn't that inspired?
Yeah, that's inspired.
It's not personally inspired,
yes,
but it's absolutely inspired.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you that.
You can't write a commentary on Yahweh's testimony without what you're writing being inspired, so long as you are, what you're communicating is consistent with the words that he shared. So if you're...
That's the catch, because there's plenty of people that have written commentaries on Yahweh's words, and they have them back-ass words. So,
you've
got
to be a little careful. I mean, the careful is... You've got to actually convey what he wrote. So you can't use an existing translation. You've got to look at the Hebrew words. You've got to look at the oldest source of those Hebrew texts. And then you have to consider the full implications of those words. You'd better dig into the stems, the conjugations, and the moods to get a complete understanding of those words. And you better make certain that your translation of those words is as complete and as accurate as it can be. But if you do that, is there any chance that what you're saying is not inspired? We've called Yahweh.
No.
Aren't you inspired?
Yes, you are. And as long as the number one question I'll bet most people in the chat room get from people who are really trying to dig into the truth. The number one question you get is, what translation do I get that's going to be right? And when you tell them there are none, they're kind of bummed out.
And then they say, well, I don't want to have to learn Hebrew. Well, if you don't want to learn Hebrew, you're going to really hate heaven.
Well, I send them to ITG and yada yada, and I suggest for the next year you read these.
Yeah. And then along the way, on at least on occasion, to look up the words for yourself. Of verifying what these words mean.
Absolutely. Yeah, but
now,
that's the thing of it is, once you Yahweh doesn't even tell us, hey, buddy, you got to go learn Hebrew. But he wants us to get to know him. He really does.
But and, didn't wait a minute. Didn't he? I'm not so sure he didn't say that, Larry. I want to pick a battle here with
okay.
you.
Okay.
When we read that Dodd, who is the guy that God called righteous, so he's setting an example that we ought to consider. And he said, I will observe, I will closely examine and carefully consider your Torah continuously and consistently as an ongoing eternal witness. Doesn't that mean we need to be aware of what the Hebrew words meant since he wrote it in Hebrew?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Now, when Yosha
said... More than anything,
Yahweh
wants us to know his nature and his plan, and of course that comes through understanding, you know, Shamar, or understanding Torah. I mean, you got to understand it. I mean, otherwise,
when,
if I say Torah, you're thinking law. If I say Shamar, you're thinking do or
yeah. If you don't, if you don't know what Torah means just by saying the word Torah, you're really not going to understand it unless you look at what Torah means in Hebrew. And Yahweh defined it with the verb yara. Now, another question here: when Yosha was presenting his instruction on the mount, and he said, do not think that I have come to annul or to do away with the Torah or the prophets, but instead fulfill it. And he considered it as an it singular, not plural. Not one of the smallest letters, the yod, or a stroke of any of the letters, the tittles, shall be erased, shall be ignored, shall be changed, so long as the heavens and earth exist. So if he got to the details of the smallest letters and the strokes that comprise the Hebrew letters that form the words, that form the sentences that convey the instruction contained in the Torah, is there any way that you can pay attention to the yods and the tittles without considering Hebrew?
No, I'm not saying to disregard Hebrew. I'm not saying that at all.
No, I know, but okay, and since Hebrew is unique among languages in that it doesn't have tenses stuck in time, but the
right,
verbs
timeless. Yeah.
are always true. It's actually timeful as opposed to timeless, but we don't have a word.
Okay.
Timeful, but timeless is it means timeful, but And since there is no English tense that is eternally true, as is every verb in Hebrew, and since there are no English capabilities of establishing a relationship between the subject and the object of the sentence, as is the case with Hebrew, and since there aren't volitional moods in English, you really, if you're going to understand it, you better pay some attention to the uniqueness of this language of heaven.
And I agree with that. I agree with that, obviously.
You don't have to
speak
Hebrew. I don't speak a word of it.
No. You don't need to speak
it. Well, you do speak a word of it. You know, you speak more than a word of it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I couldn't carry on a conversation with a two-year-old, but yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
I look it up. I understand it. I research it. You don't have to learn to speak Hebrew in order to understand Yah's word, but you do have to understand the nature of Hebrew.
As a matter of fact, I think to some extent, being able to be fluent in Hebrew would be a liability in the case of understanding what God is saying in the Torah. Because
well, it certainly is with the Hebrew speakers I run into
because
they don't get Yah. Well, you know,
right. What
so.
What happens when you're fluent in a language is you don't consider the full meaning of the words. You could read a word like kara, and if you're fluent in Hebrew, you would look at the verb kara as to call out. And you would be right, you just wouldn't be completely right. You would leave 90% of the meaning unthought of, uncommunicated, if you simply, as a Hebrew speaker, said, well, the primary meaning of kara is to call out. It's true. It's just that it also means to invite and to summon. Powerful concepts. It also means to meet and to welcome. Powerful concepts. It also means to read and recite. A powerful concept. And so the trap you fall into if you're
so
not
much
focused.
Of what they do is go by the base. They go by the very base of the word, and that's what you're doing so much is, and we're doing is going back to the base meaning of the word.
Right.
And then you get to the root of the matter. And so much of what they call the Hebrew roots movement doesn't do that.
No.
They just take the normal translation and run with it. I mean, I don't even know why they're called the Hebrew roots movement, to be
honest
with you.
And it's inadequate. Sometimes it's inadequate to the point of being almost worthless.
Well, sometimes it's harmful.
Right.
I mean, when you take Shamar and make it obey, that's harmful.
Well, it's actually Shema that they make obey. They turn Shamar into keep. But by keep, they mean
whatever.
Obey. Yeah,
yeah, or Torah into law.
Correct.
And, you know, I had this discussion with a couple of Jewish friends of mine. And, well, but Torah means law, too. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
You know, and
no, it doesn't. And they can say, they may say, well, you know, and nomos is the term that Yosha used, and that nomos means law. Well,
no, it doesn't.
First of all, Yosha didn't use the term nomos. He said Torah. And second of all, nomos doesn't
nomos
mean law.
Nomos is more like covenant. Speaks of something growing.
Right.
You know, it has nothing to do with a law.
So here's
you know, I guess our laws keep growing.
Yeah. So here's those saying, I will observe. Which means he's telling us that he's going to closely examine and carefully consider. He's going to focus on Yahweh's Torah. And then he says, when he's defining how often he's going to do it, you know, it's Paul that says, pray without ceasing, and oh, by the way, ignore that Torah. Dod has a different point of view. He says, I'm going to observe the Torah, tamid, which means continuously and constantly, without interruption. Well, that's prioritizing, isn't it? You want to understand Yahweh? Do what Dod did, and you'll know him.
He won't make a lot of mistakes either.
No,
it's hard to pull somebody off the Torah that knows it. You know, really,
correct.
It is.
It is
really. If anybody. I would go so far as to say just about anybody in the chat room, in any of us, if we walk off the path, it's intentional. It's
mm-hmm.
intentional. I don't think we could accidentally do it.
No. You know, one of the things about this issue of occasionally making a mistake, because we do. There's things that we have learned that we thought one time was true and then learned are not true. Like I at one time thought that you could call the Greek text the renewed covenant, and then I learned, well, wait a minute, the covenant hasn't been renewed. So you can't do that. You know, I had thought one time that there was a bodily resurrection, and then you read what Yahweh said about the Passover lamb. You said, no, there can't be a bodily resurrection.
Yeah, there's nothing.
And then
left
you
of
say,
it.
Wait a minute, the eyewitness accounts confirm that. So, you know, there are times that we grow and we learn, but so long as you are doing what Dod did, constantly, continually, examining the Torah, there is an absolute guarantee that you're going to continue to be enlightened, you're going to understand more every day, you're going to continue to learn. But one of the things that happens in all of this is that what you find is that truth reinforces truth. That every time you learn something new, it reaffirms what you've come to know, which is why it becomes really impossible to walk away, to get lost, to be deceived once you've focused on the Torah. Because everything that you have learned and come to know is consistent and it's reinforcing and it's exactly the same image of Yahweh and his family.
Yeah, well, it's totally reinforced. It's seamless. It's impossibly seamless, in fact. I mean, it's just too seamless, if you understand where I'm coming from here.
Right.
It's amazingly perfect. And that's why, and we've had this discussion before, I say that the powers that be don't know what we know. And you go, well, they know a lot of things. They just don't understand them. Well, you're right. they don't understand them. And if they understood what we understood, they wouldn't be on the path they're on. I mean, that's just okay. The way it is.
All right, now I'm going to throw you a curveball. This says, I will observe your Torah continuously and consistently as always and forever, la olam, as an eternal witness. All right. Eternity is a long time. Always and forever is a long time. Always and forever and as an eternal witness, those things are that's a long period of time. Our lives here on earth are never calibrated as eternal. You know, we live 80 years, and that's it. All right? Yep. We're not eternal. Dode is saying he's going to observe this Torah forever. Now, since much of the Torah is written to introduce us to God, would the Torah, capital T, have any merit to Dode in eternity?
Well, it's going to be written inside of us, so yeah, it would. It would.
Well,
yes, it would.
Torah capital T, I'm not so sure, because it introduces us to Yahweh. Wouldn't Dode already know Yahweh pretty darn well by that point?
Sure.
Okay. Now, part of the Torah is how to engage in the covenant. Wouldn't anybody living with God forever already be engaged in the covenant?
Yeah.
Okay, part of the Torah teaches us how we become immortal. Isn't somebody living eternally with God already immortal?
Yeah, they're already immortal.
Okay, it teaches us how we become perfect in God's eyes and how our imperfections are resolved by Him. Hasn't that already happened?
Yeah, and
it teaches
and
us how we get adopted into His family. Hasn't
universe.
That already happened?
Yeah.
And so
right. Everything
that's positive in the Torah, we've already incorporated into our lives, the Torah capital T. And a huge percentage of the Torah is God telling us, you know, you probably don't want to do the following things because it's going to lead you in the wrong direction. Are we going to need any of that?
Not at that point, no.
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 So, it doesn't, and if Torah was law and we were living with God as part of His family in heaven, having a grand old time, are we going to need a set of laws at that point?
Obviously not.
No. So, it brings us back to the point that for this to be eternally and completely true, that there has to be a Torah capital T and a Torah lowercase t, and while Dode is alive on earth, he focused on the Torah capital T as God's unchanging witness. And now that he is with Yahweh in eternity, he is reveling in God's guidance and instruction, lowercase t, ongoing. You know,
there would be a case to be made to listen to instructions from Yahweh forever, you know.
Correct. But those instructions have to be different, not in conflict with, but just different than the instructions on how to come to know Him, how to engage in the Torah, how to become perfect, how to become immortal, what things are effective for us to do here on earth and what things aren't effective. You know, for example, all the instructions on you really shouldn't have sex with animals and you shouldn't engage in incest. Is that going to be helpful in eternity when we're a spiritual being?
No.
No. But God's instruction on that's a black hole. Stay away from them. This is how the universe works. We're going to go down and we're going to look at how atoms and molecules and quarks and leptons all work together to make both energy and matter and how all of that was designed. That kind of instruction would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
well, you know, I'm going to look forward to instruction on how I can be spirit and therefore energy and light, and as energy and light, travel in no time to another galaxy, know how to get there, and then when I'm there, I'm going to want some pretty good instructions on how do I then transition from energy to matter so we could just, you know, have a good meal there.
Yeah. Yeah, all these things you're talking about. These are all things that are going to have to be a part of us. You know,
right.
That we, you know, sure.
So I think there's going to be an internal sharing of guidance and instruction from Yahweh. And that's why I think Dode is speaking to both in this particular case. And that he can use Torah, which means instruction and guidance, as an eternal witness, something we're always going to focus on, because everything God will be telling us then is going to be applicable to how to get the most out of our eternity with him.
Makes sense to me.
Yep. Then that's 44. 45 says, and I choose to walk, halak, in its, still speaking of the Torah's, freedom. Because indeed I have sought after, inquired about, found, and looked to your precepts and directions. So here we have this man who has constantly observed the Torah saying that to walk in the Torah is to be liberated, is to be free. Now, wasn't it Paul who said his big issue with the Torah is that it was enslaving?
Yeah.
Okay, and here's Dode, whom Yahweh calls perfect. This is my righteous dude. This is the guy I really love, and he called the Torah liberating. So who do you think's right? Because they're saying the opposite thing.
I'm going to side with Dode on that one.
I'm going to go with Dode, too. You know, because, well, let me give you an example. When Yahweh etched his 10-statement summary of the Torah and the Covenant in stone, didn't he introduce himself as our liberator, as our savior, as our deliverer?
Yes, he did.
So
yeah.
does he not think that his guidance and his instruction liberates us? That's what he wrote in stone.
It beats living under lords and kings, doesn't it?
Yeah, didn't he say, I'm Yahweh, I led you away from bondage, from slavery?
Yeah, that's right.
And so if the means that Yahweh used to lead us away from bondage, from slavery, is delineated in his Torah, then the Torah, by Yahweh's perspective, by Yahweh's definition, would in fact be, as Dode has written it here, liberating, freeing.
And you know what? That goes right back to, is Yahweh omnipresent? You know,
right.
Of course he's not. You know, he's not standing over your shoulder, micromanaging your life. That would be eternal slavery.
Right.
You know,
that would absolutely. Where
everything
what Dode is saying is that by walking in the Torah, I'm liberated. You know, Paul and Christians would say is that unless you can obey every nit and law in the Torah, that you are condemned by it, and therefore you're enslaved by it. And Yahweh is saying, no, I use my Torah guidance to liberate you from religion and politics, from slavery. And Dode, having read that, says, you know, when I walk in the Torah, I'm liberated. You know, Larry, you and I have talked about this in the past, and I may get some flack, and I don't mean to give you some flack here, but that you and I have, on occasion, had a piece of bacon.
Yeah, actually enjoyed it, too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, so. And I've had some baby back ribs. Now, I'm not going to eat bacon or baby back ribs during the 7-day celebration of Pesach matzah. But occasionally
right.
I have a baby back rib. And, you know, I look at it as God didn't tell me that I couldn't have a baby back rib. What he said is that, you know, pigs, not good for you to eat. And I look at the Torah and I said, all right, is the Torah a law that when he says this is not good for me to eat, can I interpret that as a law that I must obey? I can't get there.
No.
What I get
well,
is...
You know, there's so many times people will, what they'll do to reinforce this idea that it's damning and horrible. and somehow this separates them from everybody, that they don't eat a piece of bacon, is they'll throw up Isaiah where he's talking about it being an abomination to eat the Easter ham. You know,
well, it is an abomination to eat the Easter ham. You know,
that's
I'm telling you that,
well,
that
of course
celebrating
you and I
a religious
are not
meal,
sit down and take part in pagan
right.
festivities any more than we're going to have a Christmas tree in our home.
Right.
You
yeah,
know,
I,
I'm not going
I
to
agree
do that.
That.
You're not going to do it. Neither is anyone else. But,
right.
you know, you can take anything out of context to any degree you want. But, you know,
but
yeah, it's
what,
not
let's
good
just
for me to
that,
eat a piece of bacon, I guess. But I
let, let's just say that we did eat a an Easter ham. And let's say we ate the Easter ham during Passover Matzah and Bukurim.
Big,
would we be
big,
condemned
big
for doing it? Would we have broken a law?
No,
that
we wouldn't be, but it would be pretty
God?
Low.
No,
no, I don't think it would.
No. And in fact, when Dode did things that were in opposition to Yah's instruction, did it cause Dode and Yahweh to be estranged? Did Dode say, did God say, you know, I'm going to condemn you to hell for that?
No, no, that's
no.
not that's not his nature.
No, no. Is following Yahweh's guidance and advice
made a mistake
good?
That you
Absolutely.
Were in total opposition to, and then you said, what did you do? Did you disown him for life? Of course you didn't.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think, and I'm going out on a limb here, and I'm not telling you that I'm speaking for Yahweh here, but I'm going to give you my impression, and I understand here, you need to understand, everyone that's listening, is that I view the Torah just as Dode expressed it. I view the Torah as being enormously liberating. All right. I think that the moment you say that because God said that eating fish without gills, which would mean eating a lobster, is not healthy for you. That if you were to say, all right, what I'm going to do is I am never going to eat a lobster. I am never going to have a shrimp cocktail. I am never going to take a bite of a rib. I will never have a taste of bacon. Would then you be looking at the Torah as a book of rules that you have to obey, or as a document that's God's instruction that can liberate you?
Well, I think it would be the former, not the latter.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a guy attack me on the bacon front. You know, what I said to them is, you know, I like my pizza with pepperoni on it. Okay? And I do. And next thing you know, I was being attacked. And this from a guy who sat down and the first thing he did was order alligator tail at a restaurant.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, both Larry and JB, please chime in here. There is a difference between God providing an instruction and guidance that he says, you know, seafood that doesn't have gills is not healthy for you to eat. But seafood with gills is healthy for you to eat. There is a difference between that. And Yahweh was saying that if you're not circumcised as a male of spiritually and of the flesh, you ought not participate in Pesach. You are not welcome into my home, and you are in conflict with the terms and conditions of the covenant. Now, when it comes to God making it, saying, this is a requirement for participating in the covenant and for becoming immortal and entering my home, you know, there's no wiggle room on that. There is no, you know, that was some advice and you know. No.
You know, if Yahweh said to me, if he said in his word,
yeah,
if you ever eat a piece of bacon, you're not going to enter my covenant, you know, you're not going to be a part of the covenant.
I would not eat bacon.
Absolutely.
There we would be. If God said that bacon, pepperoni on pizza, was such an abomination to him that those who were to not obey his instructions as it relates to that, not to acquiesce, not to agree to that, would be excluded from the covenant, would be excluded from eternal life, and be excluded from heaven. If he were to make the case that there is a symbolic and spiritual implication of pepperoni, I mean, I'd be there. I'd be right there with you.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, the sign of the covenant, there is a part of the male anatomy that gets a man's attention. There's a part of the male anatomy that has everything to do with conceiving life. There's a part of the male anatomy that helps you enjoy and a loving relationship with your wife. There's a part of the male anatomy that's really important to a guy. I think that if I make a sign there and just ask you to cut off a little bit of that, so that as you're engaged in a loving relationship with your wife, as you're engaged in conceiving children and new life, that you remember me. You know, I get that. I'm right there with you. You know, that's pretty clever. And even the idea of cutting the covenant and cutting that little bit off, you know, I'm with you on that. I get it. That's going to be the sign of the covenant. I'm good. I want to accept that sign. I'm right there with you. And particularly for us as parents to do that for our sons so that we raise them to be Yahweh's children, I understand all of that, man. That is... Now, if God only said, listen, I prefer you to be circumcised because I think it's you'll feel a little better and you're going to be a little healthier, and he didn't tie it to the covenant, didn't tie it to our salvation, and he didn't tie it to heaven.
It'd be a different issue, wouldn't it?
Be a whole different issue.
Yeah, and, you know, my parents were atheists, and I'm circumcised as a baby. I suppose maybe that was just the common thing at the time.
Yeah. You know, I was, and my children were, and I'm glad. But I tell you what, I'd resolve that issue if I wasn't, because
right,
I've been really clear in this regard. So the thing that Dode recognizes that he was a flawed guy, and that his flaws did not affect his relationship with Yahweh, and that his relationship with Yahweh was not based on his behavior, but instead on who Yahweh is, what he has done, what he has promised, and Dode's response to what Yahweh was offering. And that's true for all of us.
Yeah, I've often said, you know, Yahweh doesn't expect a lot of us, but he really doesn't. He knows better. He's smarter than that. So, you know, we don't have to fool ourselves and pretend to fool him and all that. We are who we are, but... He does expect us to take his word seriously.
And if we do that, if we take his testimony seriously, strive to understand, if we do what he said, what Dode did in this statement, I closely examine and carefully consider your Torah continuously, and I view it as your eternal witness. And we as we study it, we come to know Yahweh, understand who he is and what he is offering. I don't think God is asking anything more than for us to embrace what he has offered. I really don't. I think so long as you prioritize the Torah, the rest of it is he takes care of.
Well, you know, if you do prioritize the Torah, you know, one of the things you're not going to be doing is running off to church every Sunday.
Correct. Or any Sunday.
Or, ever. Any Sunday or Wednesday night or whatever else. You're not going to have crosses hanging around in your house. You're not you're not going to be out there carrying signs for candidates running for presidents. You're really pretty much in opposition to all those things. I mean,
You're going
to
walk away from it. You're going to prioritize God's discussions with Abraham because that's where the covenant is presented, and you're going to walk away from country, and you're going to come to understand that he was walking away from Babylon, and that God has a lot to say, to teach us, to Torah us, in the prophets, particularly. Yirmiyah and Yashaya and through the Psalms. like this one. You know, one of the things that I really like about this liberating nature of the Torah is, isn't the purpose of matzah to free us from our flaws, from our sins, so we appear perfect in God's eyes?
That's right.
So when all God sees of us is the best that we are, the moments we focus on his testimony, the moments we focus on his name, on who he is, and embrace him as our Father, we look pretty good, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of, you know, what is required of us to become perfect in God's eyes, to answer his invitation, to observe matzah?
Yeah.
To accept the five terms and conditions of the covenant, all of which are actual benefits for us?
Yeah, I totally accept them. I love them. Yeah, I'll roll
right
around to them. You know,
I will too. I'll wallow in them. This is cool stuff. Mm-hmm. I love every one of them. And the hardest
one. It's a neat little
plan.
It's a beautiful plan. Have parties with me. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not a religious deity.
He's asking so much of us. He wants us to actually engage and spend time with him. What a selfish person.
Of course.
He is.
You know, and what's amazing too is there's only one of the five requirements for participating in the covenant that's difficult. Walking away from our country, from our familial customs.
I don't know. At some point, you get jaded enough that that's pretty easy to do too. If you've got
that was the point I was going to make. Initially, that one's hard, but once you have done it and you understand what you have left behind. Man, I want to tell you, I am so much more liberated, so much freer, so much happier now that I'm not a Republican, now that I'm not a patriot, now that I'm not supporting the military, now that I'm not a Christian, and I am so much freer, so much happier. It's just this enormous burden of all of that corruption is gone.
Yeah, and it becomes obvious it's corruption, too, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
It just
really
makes life so much easier.
It doesn't make life so much easier.
Well,
you know,
you don't have to stand there and support lies, do you?
Yeah, which like church are you going to go to? I'm not.
Yeah, it's like the difference between sharing Yahweh's words and trying to recruit somebody into a church.
Right.
Everybody that's in that chat room tonight and listening to this that's engaged can relate to that. If they were ever part of a church and they were trying to bring people into the building because their preacher was different, that group was different, then you find out they're all the same, right, in the end. That's what you find out. But sharing Yahweh's words is an easy thing.
Right.
It's a fun thing.
Right. So here's Dode saying, and I choose to walk in the Torah's freedom, because indeed I have sought after, inquired about, I have found, and I have looked to your prescriptions for living. Okay. That's what we find. When we examine the Torah, we find Dad giving us prescriptions for living. And when we understand those, when we appreciate those prescriptions for living, then we are free. We are completely liberated. And one of the things we're liberated from is our flaws. I know my flaws. Yahweh doesn't. Pretty cool.
I never thought of it that way.
but
I have thought that there are things Yahweh chooses not to know. He's going to know whatever he wants to know. But there are things he chooses not to know.
You know, but he specifically says that he not only doesn't know our flaws, but that whatever he may have known, you know, before we embraced the conditions of his covenant and we observed matzah, he says, even what I previously may have known, I've forgotten. I've obliterated from my mindset. It's what makes us so comfortable. I know I'm flawed. I know I've got issues. My wife knows I have issues. my God, doesn't.
Yeah, I heard she's going to write another book.
Yeah. But, you know, my God, Yahweh, doesn't know that I have issues. That's one of the reasons I can be, you can be so, you know, if God didn't have a mechanism.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing.
It is. But really, if God did not have a mechanism of precluding seeing our flaws, how could you and I ever be comfortable walking up to him? Wouldn't we feel vulnerable? Wouldn't you feel naked? Wouldn't you feel intimidated to embrace a perfect God if he could see all of your flaws?
There are certain things he does not want to see.
Right.
You know, there are people I love to talk to. You're one of them. There's people I love to be around. But I don't want to know every little aspect.
No.
Not even of my wife, okay?
Yeah.
I really, you know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I could get crass here, but I'm not going to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, there are certain elements of people's lives I just don't want to see or know about. I just don't.
Right. And in the case of God, he's a little bit more perfect than you are, Larry. And
yeah,
it would be
little.
Really?
Wouldn't it be tough? Yeah, wouldn't it be tough if let's just say your wife was just perfect? Wouldn't it be tough to be comfortable around her, knowing that you're flawed, and that if she could see every one of your flaws, wouldn't that be intimidating, uncomfortable? And so,
yes, it would. It'd get weird.
It's weird, and so it is essential that God doesn't see our flaws so that we can be comfortable around him, so we can enjoy his company. And also
that's
we can party around
thing.
Him.
You know, that's the freeing aspect of everything. It's just his words are so direct.
Right.
You know, very few people understand he means what he says. And,
yeah.
And what
so,
you're bringing up is part of it.
When
you know?
We're talking about the Torah, rather than get uptight, I relax. You know, when we're going to do a program like this one, and the program is going to be on the Torah, I am like totally cool, totally relaxed, because I get the purpose of the Torah. I'm really comfortable with the purpose of the Torah. Now, if we were going to do something on, you know, some unique aspect of Yah's teaching, I'm going to be uptight because I want to, you know, do I really understand this? How does that work? What do all these words mean? But we're talking about the Torah here, man. I get it. I love it. You know, it's. I see it as a completely liberating, enlightening, uplifting, freeing document.
Well, clearly that's how Dode sees it too, and that's what he says it is. And these aspects that you're, you know, I'm really thinking about what you're saying to see the most perfect parts of it. You know, to see the most perfect parts of anybody would be a beautiful thing. Really.
Yes.
Almost.
So
anybody.
Let me ask you this question. I've told you that you ought to be careful that when I'm sharing my opinion, that I view the Torah as completely liberating and that every aspect of the Torah's instruction is designed to help me come to know Yahweh better and more completely understand what he's offering and how to benefit from it. That's how I see the Torah. And I'm telling you that that's my interpretation of this, and you should be careful that I'm just a flawed individual. Now, when Dode says that that to walk in the Torah is ultimately freeing and liberating, and Yahweh says of Dode, he's a righteous dude, man. I love him. Does it not give some credibility that maybe
that
really is the right approach?
It certainly isn't law, because you don't walk in the freedom of the law.
No. Nope.
That's for sure. You know.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
it's,
you know, I'm...
Yeah, there are aspects of the Torah, like the one you just went over, that, it's mind-boggling, and yet he talks about, you know, not seeing our imperfections, and...
Right.
Wow. Seeing
so if our interpretation of the Torah is consistent with the guy who Yahweh says, he's righteous, he's perfect, he's vindicated... Pretty hard to go wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd change places with Dode right now if I could. You know, I mean, I really would.
I'd change minds with him. I would change
you know.
Everything except I'd rather have my wife than his harem. But other than that,
I would agree there.
Yeah, I've this, you know,
well,
the Mormonism
I'm
and Islam like, with well, multiple wives. I just don't get why that's a good thing.
No. I'm happy.
You know,
with
I love my wife, and I can tell you, I don't want two. I wouldn't
even want two
if they were both like my current wife.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
No. Well, that would take a lot of time because, you know, there's a lot of intellectual investment that goes into a relationship like that.
Well, intellectual investment, aren't we the politician? Very good.
Yeah, my wife takes a lot of my mind and
JV, that was smooth.
She engages me on an intellectual level more than anyone I
know. Yeah, and she's listening right now. So.
Yeah, I know. She's smiling.
We have
back at us here.
I don't know that I have the mental energy to keep up with two or three of her.
You just you keep that up there. We're going to believe you. We believe you, don't we, Larry?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And I will choose to continually speak the word within your witness, reporting it before and against the leaders of mankind's political, religious, economic, and military institutions. And I will not hesitate, nor will I be emotionally distressed. So, Doe transitions.
That's a strong statement, by the way.
You betcha. Doe transitions here between, he wants, you know, the passage that we did not read today, it happens to be my favorite in the psalm, which is that Doe is saying that he wants the words that come out of his mouth to be wholly consistent with Yahweh's teaching, with his testimony. And then he says that to make that happen, I'm going to consistently observe the Torah as your eternal witness. And if you do that, then he's reinforcing this again, that if you do that, then the words that you speak will be consistent with Yahweh's testimony, and that's the thing that you ought to wield against the Melech. These are the societal leaders, and they're societal leaders in all genres, the Melech. Political, religious, economic, and military is conveyed by Melech. This is not Melech, or Melech, the spiritual messengers. This is Melech. And it's actually written different in Hebrew. And so, having inspired Doe to say, you want to know what you should wield at the religious and political and military leaders? My testimony. That's what Doe wielded against them. I want you to wield my word.
That is a strong statement. That's strong. I love it. That's strong.
And one of the things that Doe said is, if I do that, and I don't hesitate in doing that, I am never going to be ashamed, frustrated, or emotionally distressed.
And I agree with him. I really do.
If you tell a pastor that God's name is Yahweh and that the adversary's name is Lord, you are going to be worried about what you said? Are you going to be distressed?
No. I have no problem with it.
If you say that Yahweh encouraged us to do what we're doing, which is to observe the Shabbat and celebrate it in this way, and to keep it special in this way, set apart from other days so we can spend it sharing and understanding Yah's testimony, are you ever going to feel uncomfortable telling that to somebody that's headed to church on Sunday?
Not at all. No. I enjoy doing it, really.
Yeah.
So
when you hear Yah say that we should observe his Torah, and you're speaking to somebody that thinks the Torah has been annulled, you think that you would you ever be emotionally distressed? Would you ever hesitate? Would you ever be ashamed of telling somebody that Yah said observe his Torah?
No, not at all.
And the reason is God's made it real clear here. We should, just as Dode chose to speak the word that is inscribed within his witness, which he has already told us is the Torah, reporting it against the leaders, that's the way we ought to go too.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's
my
strong.
Opinion of Barack Obama is irrelevant. When I compare Barack Obama's statements and actions against Yahweh's instructions in his Torah, then, you know, I've got an issue with him.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. He's pretty Torah-less there.
Yeah, that's there's a Torah-less one.
Yeah.
As he goes from, you imagine 2 days in succession, you meet with the single most repulsive man on earth, the head of the Roman Catholic Church. Yes. And you go from there to meeting with the head of the personal fiefdom of Saudi Arabia, the primary sponsor of Islam in the world.
Amazing.
And that's 2 days in a row. And you you hug them both, and you tell them both how much you love them, and you
You're just
them.
Rolling around in it, aren't you, at that point? And that's filth.
That's filth.
Yeah.
That's filth. And I have elected to constantly delight in, and I have found great pleasure in, the terms and conditions of your agreement, which relationally I love and actually desire. I think I heard, Larry, you say earlier that you actually love the terms and conditions of the covenant, that you'd wallow in them.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think it's great. It's separate.
What did Doja say? I have elected to constantly delight in, I found great pleasure in the terms and conditions of the covenant, which relationally I really love and desire.
That's right.
So I want to tell you, when you're attitude towards something that's important to Yahweh is a match for Dodes, whom Yahweh says, I love. A pretty good position to be in, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a beautiful position to be in. I'm not too awfully worried about what this world has to throw at me at this point.
I don't care either. Really don't care. And I'm hoping in a way that that my life continues to be rich and full all the way up to the Teruah harvest. I'm hoping.
Yeah, I think we all hope that, you know, and that may or may not be true. And
I can tell you that this year is better than last year, and last year was better than the year before. And I'm enjoying it. I really am. And I hope that I get the opportunity to continue to share with Yah's family and to be part of this family and to reach out to others and encourage them to be part of the family for every day that we have available to us over the next 13 years. I hope that's the case. But, you know, if it's cut short, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be a beneficiary. It's cut short because that's going to be partying with Yah. And you know, one of the things that was really interesting about that Yashaya 17 and 18 passage is that once God harvests His children, and once He says, you know, the Islamic terrorists are flooding into to Israel, what does God say?
He says He's going to spend His time with His children. Is what He says.
That's right. I'm going to spend my time in heaven. I'm going to be warm and radiant in heaven. All-encompassing in heaven. That's where I'm going to spend my time. You know, you all deal with this. So you abandon me. So you all deal with this. So I'm happy to be gone tomorrow. But I'm hoping, since you and I and all of us know what eternity with Yah. Well, we have an inkling as to what camping out with, for all time with Yah is going to be like and how much fun that's going to be. And we know that us spending another 13 years here is not in any way shortening the amount of time that we're going to get to spend with Him. There are some real advantages of having this 13 years.
Yeah, there is. There is, and there's a – yeah, and we're out here putting out the words so that people that want to that realize there's something wrong and they want to gravitate towards the truth can do it, you know. And
yes.
That's what we're doing. We're trumpets right now, and that's what we're going to be until we leave. And most people aren't going to like that. You know, I've been called down several times. So.
Yep, but there are days where there things are not quite as much fun as there are on other days. But for the most part, wow, life is rich. I love
family.
Well,
if you think about the knowledge that we have, you know, I mean, really.
How we have grown, where we've come in the past 10 years.
Yeah, you're talking about incredible knowledge. It can't be purchased. It can't be bought. You know, to come to an understanding that we've come to, even some of this understanding tonight about, you know, I never really looked at it as in maybe that light where just the best parts of me were ever shown or the best parts of you or the best parts of anybody. That would make anybody perfect, and that would be an amazing thing. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? It is. And just that knowledge, the knowledge to get to where nothing that we have to concern ourselves with today would we have to concern ourselves with in the future is it's amazing. It's all
now,
amazing.
I'm going to ask you another question here. If the Torah was a bunch of laws to obey, if you could, if you were going to destroy your relationship with Yahweh, be excluded from heaven because you like a little pepperoni on your pizza, do you think it would be possible to say that I delight in, that I have found great pleasure in the terms and conditions of the covenant, and I really love them and desire them?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
But if those instructions on these are good things for you to eat and those things are not good for you to eat conveys a message that we ought not consume that which is poisonous, which would be religion and politics, false teaching, and we ought to consume that which is really nurturing, which would be Yah's testimony, which is really the purpose of both instructions. And if we embrace Yahweh as our Father and come to love the terms and conditions of the covenant for really the joy they bring to our lives, then that's an entirely different perspective. You can love that which brings joy to your lives. Following rules doesn't bring joy. But I'll tell you what, embracing these terms and conditions of the covenant for all of the benefit they bring to us, that brings me a lot of joy.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
So you want a way, you know, we talked about how would you reinforce whether or not Dode's words were inspired. When I do and when we do this very thing, when we find that the terms of the covenant are delightful, when we find pleasure in them, when they bring us joy, and Dode is saying that that's exactly what they do for him, aren't we finding something that's reinforcing?
Well, we are. That's right.
Yeah. So I'm, again, it's the wonderful thing about this psalm is for those of us who have just taken the approach of Yahweh is Dad, the covenant represents his fondest wish and desire, and he has enabled all of the wonderful promises through the covenant and integrated the Mikra into it, and that the Torah exists to guide us to these realizations. Once you get to that point, it's all joy. It's all fun. Every bit of it, including observing his testimony. You know,
yeah, it's smooth sailing is what
right.
It is. You don't have to hide. Look, that, you know, it's there again, there's a big difference between sharing Yahweh's words and Yahweh's nature and Yahweh's plan. And his nature, let's face it, is infinitely greater than a religious deity, you know, the way he's made out and, you know, in religious material. There's a huge difference between sharing the truth and getting people to go into a church building.
Right. I mean, find that God is fun.
I don't
I
feel like
fun.
A salesman sharing his words.
No.
Do you?
No, my relationship with him is fun.
No.
I know the liberating aspect of all of this is rather than a fearsome God that that we have to somehow please to and obey to come into his company. I find God the most likable individual in the universe. I have fun with him. We laugh together. We party together. We share meals together. We share insights together.
Yahweh really pokes his finger in the eye in some pretty funny ways, too.
He does.
I mean, when he's funny. Shabbahook, when he's talking about Paul, he says, and they don't even question him. And his name means question him.
Right. You know, when he's talking about Paul and his fixation with the male genitalia.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to tell you, it's funny. It really is funny. He has a sense of humor, and I enjoy it. I love it. And so what we're reading here in Dode is that he came to the exact same conclusion, but not just intellectually coming to this conclusion. He's incorporated this into the fabric of his life where he can say, yeah, my relationship with God, it's fun. The terms and conditions of the covenant, they're cool, man. Great stuff. Where he's saying it's freeing, it's liberating, it's relaxing. He came to this conclusion, the exact same place we've come to.
Yeah, that's right.
Yahweh is worth knowing. He is a cool dude. He is approachable. He's fun. He's
the meaning of cool. We don't even know
really
how
is.
cool is. It's a damn shame that the religious people decided to hijack his words and twist him around and change his character because,
single greatest opportunity in the universe, the single greatest gift in the universe is the means to become Yah's kid. To be loved by God as his kid. I mean,
Yada, you were
good as it gets.
You were a billionaire, right? I mean, really.
It didn't do much for me, but yeah, for a bit.
Whatever. There's not many people. Isn't that what most people dream about? Most people dream about becoming a billionaire.
Yeah, but it's pretty shallow.
I'm not saying, it's the end all, beat all.
Being Yah's kid is a billion times better.
Well, it's not even in the same league. How about having a need for money? That would be better.
Right. Yeah, I just used billion because you used the term. But inheritance, the most valuable thing in the world, the thing that brings the most satisfaction, the ultimate thing to want in this universe is to be Yah's kid.
That's right. That's right. And I just bring this up because this is coming from a guy who was a billionaire. He had the world.
Yeah, that stuff's meaningless. Being Yah's kid, that's what's really special. That's what makes
it really
smile.
Valuable.
Oh, yeah, it makes my heart sing. Makes my heart sing.
Well, there you go. I mean,
it's the thing that
most people, if you
can
show them how to be a billionaire, if you said, look, I've got these instructions, and these instructions, if you honestly follow them, if you will do these simple things, you will be a billionaire. I'll bet you would get the world as a following.
Today at lunch, I was having a discussion with my wife. We were having an intellectual exchange during lunch. And I was sharing with her the reports about Ursay, who's the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, and how he was found in his car with $29,000 to buy prescription drugs that he didn't have a prescription for, and that he was arrested on 4 felony counts of having these painkillers and all sorts of mind-altering drugs in his car. And she said, imagine that. What about this guy's life is so miserable that he needs to medicate himself into oblivion?
Apparently everything.
Yeah. So here's a guy, he's a billionaire, and he's miserable. He's so miserable, he needs to intoxicate himself so that he has an escape from reality. And here's my wife and I saying, Don't you just love life? I mean, the simple things in life. Isn't life wonderful and worth living? Isn't today better than yesterday? And the difference there is so profound, so important.
Well, it's stark, you know, in, yeah, in contrast.
I don't think I have really a fraction of a percent of what he has, and I'm happy.
Oh, but
why,
you've got infinitely more than what he has, which is why you're happy.
Monetarily.
Yeah, but,
right,
but even in terms, even in terms of just tangible wealth, you know, part of the covenant, an essential part of the covenant is inheritance. Isn't the entire universe belong to Yahweh?
Yes, it does.
And he gave
everything.
It to him. He gave it to
right.
him. Makes you pretty
right.
rich.
So you it? Own more than a billionaire. I mean, period.
Oh,
I mean, there's
course.
End of story.
You know,
yeah.
One of the things about Abraham's name that conveys something about Yahweh is it means enriching father. Now, since I have been monetarily rich, I don't look at enriching father as a form of inheritance of something of material wealth. I look at enriching as enlightenment, as shared experiences, as going on camping trips and celebrating life together. That's what I find enriching. So I just have a definition of enriching.
Well, the most enriching
rich,
thing
that
in
is
your
different.
Life is relationships, aren't they?
Right.
Aren't they? I mean,
absolutely.
That's
the most enriching
of
part of life.
Yeah. When I think of the best parts of my life, it was sitting there having great conversations with good friends.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really.
And family.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, it's not... You know, I mean, that's hopefully, you know, they get us, you know, the world is in a tailspin. It's in a hopeless tailspin. There's no way that the world makes it. There's no way that the elite make it.
Right.
There's no way anybody makes it other than Yahweh.
Yeah, we're making a mess of this world. But can you imagine, Larry, how much fun it's going to be? How enriching it's going to be?
Having
to go
no
off
needs?
To another,
oh,
another solar system in this galaxy. With Yahweh as our guide, and to find a really cool planet, and to be able to camp out with him, having some good food, some good wine, singing some cool songs out there. I mean, you want to talk about enriching.
I'm wanting to roast marshmallows around a supernova.
There you go.
Well, maybe so. Just sitting around having conversations. I mean, in-depth conversations.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just never a need.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine because I have needs everywhere. You know,
right.
We all do. And to not have needs anymore, that would be just an amazing thing in and of itself.
Yeah. I'll take intellectual stimulation over monetary gain any day.
Oh, every possible moment. And there's something even better than intellectual stimulation, which is the experience of loving relationships, doing things together with someone you love.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Relationships are at the top of the food chain, and yet we're taught that relationships are meaningless practically in this world. I don't believe that, by the way.
Yeah, it takes a village to raise a child. No, it takes a family.
It takes a village to raise the village idiot is what happens there.
Yeah, it takes a mother and father and a commitment to family and marriage to raise a child. That's what it
does. Yes, it does.
Takes.
That's right. But no, I'm with you. I mean, to break away, to break out.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the whole, the Torah for the open-minded.
Right. I am the richest individual in the universe, and I don't have even a penny more than you guys have, but doesn't change the fact that individually we are the richest individuals in the universe. We inherit all that is God's to give as his heirs. That's as rich as you can be. And you know something, as rich as we are today, we're going to be richer tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true. More knowledge we have, the better off we're going to be, you know. And
I learned that lesson just with my earthly father. Yeah, I had people who are friends of mine who were financially very well off, but their fathers were not around. They didn't spend time with them. They didn't have a good relationship with them. And to me, yeah, the relationship I have with my father was more than all the money that they had. And
yeah.
So you take that on an exponential level when it comes to Yah.
Yep, and I did not have the good fortune to get a particularly loving, supportive earthly father. And so this idea of walking away from your father's house was pretty easy for me, because it was either walk away from it or go insane. But there is, while there is a huge benefit to those of you who've had wonderful, loving fathers, there's also a benefit to those of us who have not.
Yeah, but see, I'm more with you than the other camp.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, I know you are, Larry. And but you know, I wouldn't trade my experience for the experience of really having a loving father, because I get the benefit of the contrast between
Yah
is dad and my father is dad. I like
the contrast. Yeah, the opposite. My father was a great guy. I had a great relationship with my father, but. Yeah, at the same time, walking away from it was tricky because I did have that relationship. And, you know, my father's religion was not religion, so to speak. My father was big on football and politics.
Yeah, tech.
And I followed in one. I never got football. I just never got that. But politics, I was hardcore Republican through most of my youth. And, you know, I had to walk away from that and reject that part of it. So that was a bit difficult because it did leave that rift between the two of us.
Right.
But at the same time, I had a great father,
still,
and that taught me a lot of lessons about how a father is, and that relates to my relationship with Yah. So
yeah, you got it from the good side, and Larry and I got it from the bad side. But the bad side provides a contrast that is, I don't think it's any less helpful than what you got from the good side, James.
Well, it's a lot like, you know, coming from religion versus coming from atheism. There's advantages and disadvantages on both sides.
Correct.
Right.
I mean, there are times
from,
where I would have loved my children to have enjoyed a relationship with the grandfather. And there are times in life when I had successes and failures that having a supportive father would have made the failures less painful and the successes more joyful. But, you know, what I gained by having the Larry experience of, hey man, you're on your own. I want nothing to do with you. And you need to overcome what I have done to you. You know, there's something to be learned from all of that.
You know, I this is a true story. I had left home, you know, and been on my own for years and years. I gave my parents, their only grandchildren, by the way, four of them, all of them, you know, by the world standards, winners.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the cover of a trade magazine in the insurance business, and they had me on the front cover receiving an award for writing $20 million in life insurance in 1 year.
Wow.
And it just so happened my mother came down to visit, and I hadn't seen her in years. And, you know, she got to stand there with that picture, you know, and be on the cover.
Wow.
And when my current wife met my mother at my daughter's wedding reception, all she talks about is her son-in-law and how great he is.
Wow.
You know. I just shook my and Yalda, she walks away shaking her head saying, does she realize what she's doing? And I said, you know, hey, I don't live there. I don't know those people, and they don't know me, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say about it. But I'm used to it. You know? Nothing new to me, you know. That is a true story.
Yeah, well, you know, being a parent's a wonderful experience, and it's a shame that it's butchered. That's a job that isn't enjoyed and butchered by so many. and being a grandparent, I'm not, but I hope one day to be. And well, I tell you what, I'm going to be so into the grandparent thing that I'm going to move so that I can be a grandparent. And you know, when my eldest son chose his wife, my wife and I said, you know, this is his choice. She's a wonderful person, and he loves her, and we are going to treat her as if she was our daughter. And that's just the way that song needs to be sung.
And sounds like a good way to go.
Best, most supportive in-laws and then grandparents we can possibly be. That's just, yeah, enjoy it. Family's a wonderful thing.
Well,
hey guys, I'm going to go take my bride out to dinner.
I knew that. I actually had a note on my wall that was going to happen because I'm psychic.
Yep, you're psychic, and so I'm going to go psychically because you predicted it, Larry. I'm going to go and take her to dinner. She leaves on Sunday to go back to our farm, so I don't get much more time with her here in the short term.
Right. I'll enjoy that time.
So I'm going to enjoy it, and thank you. This was a fun discussion. I enjoyed doing this with you.
I did, too. Enjoy. Have a good one.
Always a pleasure.
All right.
Glad to be
good
back.
Okay. Happy Shabbat. Bye-bye.
You too.